Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for MacBreak Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is MacBreak Weekly, episode 59 for September 26th, 2007. We will brick you. MacBreak Weekly is brought to you by Audible.com. For your free audiobook, visit audible.com/MacBreak. It's time for MacBreak Weekly, episode 59, and the core group is back with us, except for Merlin Mann, who is currently AWOL, but will show up, I'm sure, momentarily. Scott Bourne is here. We've missed you, Scott.
Well, it's good to be back. I listen to the show, and I realize occasionally I need to be gone so that you all have somebody to make fun of.
We didn't make fun of you. Scott Bourne is with the ApplePhoneShow.com, and actually, I just thought you just didn't want to be here so I could go, I unlocked my iPhone, neener, neener, neener. Actually, I'm unlocking another one right now. I am.
Well, we'll talk about that today because I've got some interesting experiences to relate that
There's some big stories there. Andy Anatko is also here from the Chicago Sun-Times and soon to be his new blog, but until then, the same old blog, CWOB.com.
That's right. And this week, I've decided to have extra presence during the show. I'm going to not be talking more, but I'm going to be closer to the microphone.
Are you using a big bottom? I have a...
Wow. I need to open a brand new Omni Outlier document. I've got 8 lines ready to go, but I don't want to use just the first one that comes to mind.
Scott Bourne knows what I'm talking about.
Yes, I do. But I was just laughing because I was quite sure that Andy was going to make that response.
I think I've decided to go with Carlotta. Come on over here. Leo wants me to do something with you. Here, come on. Here you go.
Carlotta. No, we're talking about the Aphex 230, which Scott turned me on to. And actually, I guess you mentioned it to the Aphex guys because they sent me one. And it's very nice. I'm not using it right now because I need to get better cables. I get a lot of noise in my cheap cables, so I have to get some better cables.
Probably the problem is that you probably are using the preamp twice.
No, I know. I'm not that dumb.
Okay.
Because I do have a mic preamp in the mixing board, and you're supposed to get line into the mixing board, and I did figure that part out. But but the cable I'm using is probably not what you call an oxygen.
We bought that cable with Radio Shack.
Yeah, it's probably a 30-year-old Radio Shack cable. So I'm going to go out and get some better cables because I don't have a lot of XLR to. Anyway, this is a nice, it's like an all-in-one compressor unit that you are a big fan of, and I know why now. I like it. And one of the buttons, the reason this comes up, one of the buttons is big bottom. But I'm not using my big bottom today. Alex Lindsay, are you using your big bottom?
You know, I don't have, you know, I'm not using a big bottom.
You have a compressor on your mic, though.
No, I don't.
Oh, you don't?
I just sound like this all the time.
You just have a rich, deep, mellifluous tone.
No, I'm running through a little, just a little M-Audio fast track.
Yeah, yeah.
With the PR40.
I like my PR40, although the Aphex people kind of mocked my PR40.
They said, I thought it was a really big deal when I went out and spent $12 on this popper stopper screen. And now, boy, my butt is being smoked here.
You could have used Carlotta's nylons for that. I don't think it would have been too... Yeah, I got to clean off my popper stopper. It's been stopping more than pops. let's talk about the Mac, because that's really what this is all about, ladies and gentlemen. When I say the Mac, I don't mean the Mac. I mean the iPhone. So actually, there's a lot to say about the Mac. There's a lot to say in general, but let's start off with Apple's announcement that my iPhone is going to be a brick any day now. We're looking for a new
review. You don't deserve nice things, Leo.
I tell you, I'm hurt. Steve Jobs says, I'm a cat and he's the mouse. Or is he the cat and I'm the mouse? He says it's a cat and mouse game, this unlocking business, but they do warn people with unlocked phones that you may have a brick in your pocket. He says, we have reason to believe, like our engineers are working really hard on it right now.
Our contacts at Apple aren't very good, but it makes sense. We're speculating here. We're just spitballing. We're just whiteboarding.
We think the next update to the iPhone will brick iPhones Apple said because this unlocking software just really screws up your phone. Don't you think Apple's doing this to us on purpose?
Well, I was just gonna speculate. What are the chances that this really is a concern? That they're saying, look, we know how this software works. It's not something that we would do to our own software and do to our own phones, and we don't want to be responsible for thinking of, you know, everybody's third party needs every time we do an update. I mean, that's a serious, serious problem.
Well, and I also think that it is a good preemptive strike to avoid lots of people coming in saying my phone doesn't work after they had done it. When it comes in and it's broken, they said, well, we did just tell you that we weren't going to deal with this, rather than having the guys at the Genius Bar have to deal with, you know, 10,000 people coming in and saying, well, my phone doesn't work anymore and you should handle it. Apple's preemptively saying, you know, we're not going to handle it. And I have to say, you start changing the firmware, you know, in anything, and, you know,
I don't think you're really changing the firmware. I think you're using the standard firmware. What you're doing is you're reprogramming the modem. I don't think there's any reason why that would brick the phone. Furthermore, it is legal, fully legal, to unlock your phone. Apple says they're not even claiming it's illegal. They're just saying it's violating your software license agreement. Of course, it voids the warranty. We know that. Apple is going to run into a pretty nasty PR storm if they brick people's phones, I think. But Scott, what do you know about this? You know something, I can tell.
Well, several things to think of. First of all, according to Mr. Wu, we know who he is, the analyst that's constantly quoted when it comes to Apple. He lives, breathes, drinks Apple. About 2% of the people are going to try this. I don't think we'll see a firestorm out of 2% of the people if they end up with brick phones. 98% will go, yawn, we didn't brick our phone, who cares? But realistically, you got a brand new Corvette, let's say, and you decide for whatever reason that you think that new engine in the Ford Taurus looks really good. So you decide to swap it out and put it in the Corvette. Do you now have a right to demand that Chevy service the Ford engine?
No, I don't think this is anything like that, though.
But I think it is getting closer to something like if you decided you wanted to, you know, beef out the carburetor or do something, you know, like do something.
I don't think anybody would, you know, look, you're clearly violating your warranty. And we've heard anecdotal stories of people going into the Apple store with an unlocked iPhone asking for service being turned away. I don't blame Apple for doing that. I mean, that's, of course, I mean, that's fine. But I have to say that if Apple... This will be interesting. I think if the phones get bricked, now let's define terms, by the way. Bricked means you can't recover it. It can't be restored. It is, you might as well throw it away or bring it to Apple and, you know, shamefully say, please fix
sheepishly
it.
Sheepishly say, I don't know what happened.
Yeah.
Better yet, put it on Craigslist described as lightly used. I just prefer a Windows mobile device.
Yeah.
Not warranty. As is, no warranty.
No warranty. Now, I could see how it would make it, you know, that an update would make it stop working or have the unlock stop working or whatever. But a restore should bring it back to the unknown state, and the unlock doesn't work anymore. That to me, okay, fine. To brick the phone, I think, would require, in my opinion, non-expert as it might be, active intervention on the part of Apple. They'd have to want to brick the phone.
I think that where it could come up is if Apple's reacting to people, you know, unlocking their phones by changing the firmware in the phone, so that future buyers can't unlock their phone, you know, to protect their contract with AT&T, they could run the risk of bricking your phone. You know, so if they're changing it, they may be adding security. They may not be.
But
going
doesn't a restore? If I go to iTunes and do a restore, doesn't it just replace the firmware?
No,
it does not.
Go ahead.
Go ahead, Andy.
I was just saying it just restores the operating system, the files that were loaded on the device, not the firmware. As a matter of fact, if you're worried about modifying the operating system and putting your own software on it, there are ways to back up that and then restore it through iTunes without having to reset the entire phone. But when you're talking about SIM unlocking, you're talking about some deep mojo.
Yeah, and you have to do some deep mojo to track back, Leo. It's not as simple as you.
I disagree. I mean, I know exactly what I did to unlock it. It's copying a few files on there, which I copied off of it.
Look, just go to Erica Sedin's post on.
Well, I trust her. So whatever she says, I would believe. So
okay.
What she
so you don't trust me, but you can trust her because she says what I just told you.
Which is
there's like 12 steps you got to do. It's not as easy as you make it sound.
To do what?
To restore the phone, you have to go through a bunch of mojo backtracking to make that work. She has, it's a fairly complex thing. If you look at it, it is no small feat. And you know, I personally don't, Apple came out today in clarification and yesterday saying they don't intend to brick phones, but why would they like spend man hours and engineering money and everything else to try to protect people who unlock their phone. It's like, it just seems to me silly.
No, they don't need to. And I agree. They don't need to protect them.
Yeah, they're going to do what they need to do to advance the phone. It's logically going to break what happens. I don't know that we'll actually see bricks in terms of you can never restore it. But what I think people are missing is we aren't, you know, some of the people I'm hearing talk about, they're not talking about bricks by design. They're talking about, well, brick just because people can't figure out how to bring them back.
That's different. And that's different. And by the way, Merlin Mann's joining us right now. Hey, Merlin.
Hello. Where you been, Merlin?
Hello.
A statement did come out today from the iPhone dev team. They say that according to their download numbers, they believe several hundred thousand people have unlocked their phones, which is about what you said, a percent or two of the total. No, that's actually more, isn't it? That would be set more than like 10% of the total or more. The number grows every day. I'm reading from the statement. The removal of the lock, a bug, was a major step forward in the iPhone development. I don't know what they obviously don't speak English as a native language. It made the phone free and useful to anyone, not only to those in certain countries. Apple now announces that the next firmware update expected later in this week will possibly break the handset of all of us free users in the world. It speaks of, quote, damage, end quote, done to the firmware and, quote, unauthorized access, unquote, to our own property. The removal of these firmware problems, which were built in favor for AT&T, does not cause damage, as they want to make us believe. We will provide you with a tool in the next week which will be able to recover your NCK counter and sec zones and even enables you to restore your phone to a factory-like state. In the meantime, we advise you, and I think this is very good advice, which I plan to take, not to update your free iPhone with the upcoming firmware. Wait for the next version to be fixed to work properly with your carrier and not break your phone. If I'm understanding the language there, it says, we're going to be able to fix this. Hang in there, but don't update yet.
What a bunch of bastards, money-grubbing, anti-user idiots.
Who's that?
Huh? Am I right? Internet loonies? Come on. Let's message board about this.
The
number of downloads, Leo, does not necessarily correspond to the number of
updates. I downloaded it several times, so I think that's probably the case. But who knows? No one knows.
Can't you try this on your little Oliver Twist phone to find out if it works?
I've already done it twice now. I'm actually in the middle of doing it right now. To a brand new iPhone.
Well, it's a small factory there. He's just unlocking phones.
Well, I have a... never mind. I don't want to get too deep into it. It's completely legal, by the way. I don't know why I feel so paranoid about it. Apple's done a good job of making us a little paranoid, haven't they?
I just want to know, what lawyers have come out and said it's completely legal? What lawyers have staked their reputation on?
A lot of lawyers. And by the way, the copyright board... Why are you so... I don't understand, Scott. This I'll is coming what, up again. I don't understand why you're so defensive of this. It is the copyright board said it's legal. It's legal. It is an exemption in the DMCA to unlock your phone. What is so bad about that?
The DMCA doesn't mean squat necessarily. Well, the DMCA is not controlling here, according to three different lawyers.
I don't understand, Scott. I bought this phone. It's my phone. Anything I choose to do with it is legal. What is not legal, I mean, what is, I understand is I may void my warranty. Apple may look at the phone and go, ha, pshaw, but I own the phone, Scott. Why do you want, I don't understand why you're so upset about people modifying something they own.
I'm not upset at all. B, we're modifying a phone at the Apple phone show. C, I'm simply saying that for people to just blanketly say something is legal without legal advice is dangerous. And D, I've spoken to three different lawyers that say, looking carefully at the user agreement, that there is significant potential for civil damage against those.
Apple, come and get me. I'm Leo Laporte. You know where to find me. Box 1018, Petaluma, California, 94942. I've got two unlocked phones in my possession. Come arrest me.
The bottom line is
sue me.
I think that the issue
sue
is
me.
Neither Apple or AT&T are going to go after anybody, whether it's legal or not.
I hope they do. I'd love to see that happen.
Yeah, I know.
It'd be nice. Jay Laporte.
Jeez Louise.
Well, you're going to have to do two terms concurrently because of your Oliver Twist phone. You're busted ass. Nobody cares.
We sell me with John Draper.
Sure those aren't consecutive terms.
These are, look, it's our property. It's our right to, do anything we want with it. It's Apple's right to say, I'm not going to support it. I don't blame them for that. I would blame them if they intentionally bricked them. That'll be an interesting question.
You know, my guess is I think that they're probably closing loops that people are using to unlock them.
Well, and I bet they're doing that.
I
bet they're doing that. You bet.
So the problem is that in the process of closing those loops in the firmware, they may have found out that it bricks the phone that people already have.
I think it's FUD. I think it's FUD from what? Apple. I think it's FUD. I think they want to discourage people from doing it. We'll see, but I think that
they probably have a contractual obligation to do that.
They may well, yeah. I agree.
I think that's another thing.
You do a deal with the devil, that's what happens.
Yeah, I think AT&T, if I'm AT&T, I'm certainly going to demand that they try.
You bet. And we saw the same kinds of deals with the record companies, and Apple admitted to them in the past. So, well, I'm sure AT&T is demanding it.
Well, and Apple makes it, and it's not just AT&T. I mean, Apple makes a lot of money. I mean, Apple's getting some percentage of our subscription.
Right.
Right.
Not mine.
Not yours.
Yeah, I think the AT&T contract, from all the information I've received, requires them to try to defend against this sort of thing, and it makes sense.
And it's good business, and if I were an Apple stockholder, which I'm not, I would demand it of them.
My question is does this include also unlocking your phone so that you can run third-party apps? You know, is that the same?
And remember, Jaws said, we don't mind that so much. It's the unlocking we're not crazy about.
That's the data point that really colors how I interpret this statement from Jobs about SIM unlocking. That when asked point blank about doing something that can't possibly damage the phone itself but is inconvenient for Apple, Apple's, for one way or another, their response was, sure, go ahead and do it. I mean, you can always restore it later. You know, this is an issue that if you damage your phone, we can probably fix it for you at the Apple store. I mean, that in a larger context, it's when people are starting to do something that will cause a problem for support. They'll cause it to stop working and give the Genius Bar and Apple service a huge amount of problem in trying to restore this dead body back to life. That's when they start issuing warnings saying, look, we're not going to promise you that your device is going to work again. Now, I'm certain that there's a certain benefit to Apple and that there's going to be a certain amount of collateral fear, uncertainty, and doubt. But when I look at the whole picture of the announcements they've made about people doing things with their iPhones that, you know, are not in the commercials, they're consistently defending the users and trying to stop them from doing things that are going to, you know, make them unhappy in the long run, but allowing them to do things that will merely inconvenience them in the short term.
By the way, it's probably less AT&T and more T-Mobile, O2, and Orange, the European carriers who've agreed to do the iPhone. They're the ones who have the most to lose here, I would say. Anyway, there's certainly a lot of pressure on Apple to do it. You're right. Apple's probably just trying to protect us. Yeah, that's it.
Excuse me. I need to have another glass of Kool-Aid here.
I don't mean to be so much... I don't want to be so much as a, I don't want to sound too much of it in defense of all this stuff. Cause I mean, I think it's great to unlock it. And I think, especially if you're in some other country, I think it's, you know, it makes a lot of sense in many ways. But I think as someone who, you know, we make a lot of deals with a lot of software companies for the Pixel Core, you know, to get free software or to get long seeds for the, you know, for our members. And it takes a lot of me making lots of agreements with lots of software companies of we won't do this and we will do this and this is how we're going to do it. And it is a good deal, you know, for our members. And the issue that I have, though, is that I get into the same kind of things where members can't step outside the lines, you know, because I made agreements with a lot of people about what needs to happen and how it needs to happen and so on and so forth. And we have, you know, and ours are much more restrictive than, you know, what Apple's doing. you know, but the point is that I can see this situation where you have a relationship, whether you made a deal with the devil or not. I think that we're probably better off, at least at the beginning of this, to have Apple only have one. I wish it wasn't AT&T, but having one service, because trying to get the compatibility to work with everybody might've been complicated. But the issue is that you do have to, you know, maintain that relationship. I mean, iTunes wouldn't have gotten to where it was if it didn't have DRM. Now we want to get rid of DRM now, but it needed to have, you know, something figured out, and that needed to be, you know, aggressively, you know, protected, or Apple couldn't make the agreement to get it off the ground.
I think that was the key point. That was the Saturn rocket that got the vehicle to the moon. Now that we're there, we can jettison it.
Yeah, I mean, 5 years from now, Apple and Google will make their own, you know, cell phone thing and drive all these guys into the ground. You know, so, you know, they just need to get off the ground first. You know, and, you know, Apple had to do anything they asked for the first 2 or 3 years, and now, you know, now they're trying to just, you know, keep out of whatever Steve wants to do. You know,
I think this whole thing is very interesting, and I just want to point out we had a phone, one of the test phone at the Apple phone show, that got dropped by one of our staff. I won't say her initials, but it's Liana Lehua. And the phone was damaged. So we said, okay, that'll be our play phone. And we've been like 3 days trying to unlock it. And we keep running into problems. Everyone keeps saying it's so easy. We've had several different issues with it, but I do think we'll get it unlocked. I know we can. Shuby's been trying to help us. We have been able to get like the games and stuff on it, but we haven't been able to actually get it to work with the T-Mobile SIM. But
you need to send it to Leo. Leo's got this thing down pat.
Actually, Shubi says he can do it now in 18 minutes. So he's got a pretty good track record. But all of this all of this software is pretty, you know, flaky. I mean, it's not exactly. Although this new Independence, which is the GUI version and the one I'm using right now, does a pretty good job and makes it pretty straightforward. It's three button pushes.
Well, Leon is pretty smart about this stuff, and she's been having trouble. But I mean, she's like a wizard at this stuff, and I've been watching her do it. It is difficult.
No, it's not at all. I don't know.
On behalf of people out there listening, is it a linear process? It's not a question where at step three you have to look at some numbers and figure out, okay, if this, then you have to punch in this number. Over here, you have to do a route 13 to turn this clear text and encrypted text.
No, it's much easier.
Something like that.
Okay. So here's the deal. I have an iPhone in the box I picked up yesterday. You download the program Independence. You also need to download firmware from Apple. That's one hole they could easily plug that they haven't for reasons I'm not sure. Once you have those files on your system, this is a GUI interface now, and you follow the steps. That's literally a button push, and it tells you in order. Independence, yeah. She's probably
Use AnySim.
I don't know anything about AnySim.
It's like there's a wiki for this.
Yeah, you want to do the iPhone dev stuff. Don't use the stuff that's not from iPhone dev team. These guys.
Have you gone to
this
iPhone.540.net?
I don't know that one.
It's like it's a wiki.
AppTap, have you tried that?
Yeah, AppTap works great.
I bricked my phone when I did that one. I had to restore it.
A brick, so we should be very careful about how
we... I didn't brick it.
Yeah.
It was a temporary brick.
Right.
If you want to see what a brick looks like, I've got a WRT54G I can show you. that's what a brick looks like.
Did you try to change the firmware on that?
I think I interrupted in the middle of a firmware upgrade, so now I'm using my Apple Extreme.
Well, maybe that's where we went wrong. We tried to use AnySim, and that just simply doesn't work.
Tell her to go to... It's on Google Code. It's called Independence. It's code.google.com/p/independence. That's all she needs.
That's okay. Ironic. Did you see on was it Global Nerdy today? Do you read Global Nerdy?
What's Global Nerdy?
Oh my God! It's such a great site. I think it's Joey the accordion guy does it, and it's all kinds of just great nerdy stuff. And the latest one is did a blabby Google employee spill the beans about the G phone? And it's the story of this woman running into the Emeryville Apple store and going, oh my gosh, they're only giving G phones to 30 people at Google right now, and I need to buy one of these. And a Google employee. And everybody turns and goes, buh?
Uh-huh.
G phone? And then she changed the subject very quickly.
Oh, wow. I love
it. So, yeah, it's just kind of interesting that on the Google Code site, you'll go and find this.
Well, Google Code allows anybody to put anything up there.
Yeah, yeah. I know. That might be fun to talk about later, though, at the rumor of a G phone.
This, by the way, allows you to do wallpapers, applications, but Independence is a great start, and it makes it very easy to get this thing done. It's not, you know, anyway, it's, I don't think it's that difficult. I guess the point is it's happening, it's out there, Apple's going to do everything they can to stop it. Anybody who's got an unlocked iPhone would be sensible not to update. What is Apple going to do in that update, though, that makes people want to? I think that's the next logical question is, we know they're going to add the Amazon store. Is the Wi-Fi store enough to get people to want to do this update? Maybe they'll put something else in there.
Add the Amazon store, add the wireless.
Starbucks. I'll talk about Amazon store in just a bit, because I have to say, this is another big chink
that's
in
big
Apple's
news.
Armor. Yeah, and by the way, fantastic.
Real easy to use.
Oh, my gosh. This is... much more than I realized it was going to be. After trying Unbox, it was like, oh, I don't want to do this. All right, let's talk about it.
you're saying they're going to try. So you're saying
I think Apple's
got to
put something in this. Yeah, I think Apple's got to put something in this update to make people go, oh no, I've got to run this update.
And that's what I think they should do. I mean, both as an Apple user and an Apple evangelist and Apple stockholder, I want Apple to fight this problem by saying, we're going to be so good that you want to use us. That's the right way. That's the right way to do it.
Yeah. I might say that they wouldn't have had this problem if they'd allowed third-party applications and maybe done an unlocked phone to begin with. But let's see. What would you suspect they would add? Maybe third-party apps?
No wonder people keep breaking into your house. You lock your doors.
We're definitely going to see the Wi-Fi store and the Starbucks thing happening. I think people will like that. But I think we're going to see a couple other little goodies related to the stuff they're doing for the European phones.
Yeah. You got to do something else, I think. You have to make it so that people are going to really feel some pain if they don't update.
The pain.
Well, it's you're thinking that for most people, there's going to be an active decision about whether they want to apply a certain update or not. I think that 99% of the people, they see a new update and they automatically download and install it.
You have to talk about these evil unlockers that need to hurt them. How are they going to hurt them? What you really want to do is make something so compelling that the unlockers don't think twice and just do it, and then they have a brick in their hands.
Well, what you want to do is make it so they can unbrick it and get back in line.
Yeah, that's why I think a brick is a bad idea. I mean,
a total brick is a bad idea. Yeah. I'm on record of saying I don't want them to do that.
Yeah,
I don't think they should do that.
No, what they should do is, you're right, exactly, make it so that the unlock doesn't work anymore.
Yeah, just say, come on back into the fold. We got new stuff for you.
AT&T's waiting.
Yeah, I think that's the way to do it. I don't believe for a minute they're going to purposely brick, and I mean brick, phones. I think that some phones will be bricked because people won't know how to get back.
Right.
I think if Apple's smart, they'll make a clean path back for people. Say, bring your phone to the Genius Bar. We'll fix you back up. No problem. And that's the way to do it. And if they keep adding services and they keep doing a good job, people want to use the product.
Yeah.
You know what they could do? Like a teacher, you know, who takes away your slingshot, they could do something where you have to take it in. So let's say they run some kind of an update and it bungs your phone and says, basically, take this into the Genius Store to have it restored. That would be one way to kind of out people and give some kind of a...
No, they should do the same thing that, like, the Miami police do to get in people with outstanding warrants.
There's a
new T-Mobile amnesty program. We will give you $1,000 in free iTunes credit if you come in with your unlocked phone. Just let us take a look at it for about 5 seconds.
Yeah. That's how Chief Wiggum got all those people. He said he was giving away a free boat.
Free boat. Melt down your guns. Melt down your phones. So let's talk about this Amazon store. Have you purchased anything from it yet, Merlin?
I did. I went in. I heard it this morning. I was kind of groggy. Heard it this morning on Morning Edition. And I just for fun, just dove in. And yeah, it's the only thing is you do have to have this. There's
you
an
don't
intermediate,
have to have it.
You don't? Okay, well, so long story short, you go to Amazon, you click. They've got what? Something like 2 million MP3s?
Unprotected, 256 kilobit MP3s.
No DRM. Yeah, no DRM, and it's pretty good. It's not, it's interface-wise, it's, you know, e-music-like. It's not as awesome as the iTunes store, but as far as going in and grabbing a track, it was a breeze, and it's 89, what I bought was 89 cents.
You need
what's the compression?
Pardon me? It's 256 kilobit MP3.
Ooh.
No DRM.
That's pretty strong, yeah.
And I got the press release this morning, and as a jaded old tech pundit, you think, okay, first, low quality. Second, you need a special installer. You need a special, and then as I'm looking through this press release, and then as I'm going to the site, it's like, wow, there's absolutely nothing wrong with this. You download an MP3 just like you're downloading from some street band that you saw in Harvard Square today. It's awful. Awesome.
You do download a client if you want to buy an album, because it's a downloader. But one of the nice things about the client is it moves it automatically into iTunes. So it's a pretty
take that, Steve.
Take that. I mean, I have to say, this is good enough that before I buy an album on iTunes or a song on iTunes, I'm going to check Amazon first. It's also I might point out cheaper in many cases.
No, I think it's kind of weird though that like so I went in and bought this I bought a Bishop Allen track, and it just seems kind of funny to me. It looks like they haven't integrated it with the actual music the CD purchases yet. Because if it were me I were Amazon,
right.
I would say, oh, you know what? You can buy this, and if you're Amazon Prime, you'll get it tomorrow, or you can download the tracks from right here, click.
But that's just a matter of time.
That's because, no, but think about that, though. Think about the Amazon. Amazon has got to be up there with Wikipedia in terms of Google Juice. So you go out and you search on a band, and you land on an Amazon page, and you're one click away from buying a song. Think about that. iTunes doesn't have that.
No.
Or do they? Does iTunes Express?
It's not a. Now they do have a link back. This is interesting, from the download music to the CD store. So I just searched for Sinatra. It says see all 1,663 MP3 song results, and then right below it, shop for Sinatra in our Amazon CD store. So they've got that other link going. No,
this
and that is a disadvantage
Apple,
iTunes has because it's not a browser. Yeah. It's not. It's a dedicated, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean,
yeah, but okay. Couple things. I think it's good. I think it's the best iTunes wannabe site I've seen so far, but the problem
left-handed is, compliment.
The problem is that I've heard this story so many times. We've got the new iTunes killer, and just yesterday, I think Virgin shuttered its attempt. I mean, how many of these things have gone by
the
wayside?
Here's the difference.
Who said it's an iTunes killer?
I think it could be an iTunes killer. Yeah. Don't you
think? But I mean, like, it's an iTunes competitor, and it's going to hold Apple's feet to the fire on not being douchebags about the stuff they do with their music.
Yeah, it's not an iTunes killer. It's more like a motivation for iTunes competitor.
It's a viable competitor. It's the first viable competitor, absolutely.
And on the internet, like, this whole idea that there's got to be like one company that takes all the oxygen out of the space. Like, okay, whatever, maybe.
No, it doesn't work.
But no, I mean, Amazon, think about Amazon's customer base. You know how many people buy Amazon stuff every day?
Me.
It's mind blowing. I'll bet you it's a damn sight more than Apple.
Me.
I think it's good. I do want to make the point. I think it is good for iTunes to get a competitor. I think all the previous ones have sucked. I hope this one turns out to be
best. Scott, you're just another one of these Amazon haters. You haven't even seen, and you're saying the battery life is not going to be any good. You haven't even tried it yet.
I used it today. I do think it's good.
But why would you buy something wait a minute. Let's see. No, I thought they had Beatles, but they have all these other non-Beatles related stuff. Why would you buy something copy protected in 128 kilobit AAC for more money if you could go to the Amazon store? Maybe it's a little more difficult and buy it for 89 cents unprotected.
I'm concerned about it not actually fitting in with all my iTunes stuff is one thing. I hope that Apple doesn't do something to make it so that you can't do it. Didn't I hear something recently? They're trying to make it so that you can't take the iTunes songs out or something.
It would absolutely fit in. The metadata is in there. It's got cover art. It's indistinguishable from any kind of an MP3 you'd rip yourself.
Let me see. Let me see. Do I have album art? Yep. I got album art. Shows up in cover flow. Interesting. It's showing up as a variety of different bit rates. They must be using VBR. They are. They're using VBR in it. That's kind of surprising.
Well, I mean, the incentive to use iTunes still is that it's at least in this 1.0 beta of what Amazon's doing. It's a lot easier to browse and find music that you don't know you're interested in on the iTunes store than it is on Amazon.com.
Maybe.
I agree. The
experience. And then there's the wireless download feature that'll come with the new.
Yeah, they're going to be glad they have that. Now, it's interesting. It's encoded with LAME. It is encoded at VBR. Now, LAME's a good encoder, but it's an open source encoder, which is kind of interesting.
I'm just saying that name wasn't come up with by marketing people.
I know.
You won't see that on the side of a bus. Amazon.com, all of our music is encoded with LAME at a fundamental level.
It looks like it has full MP3 tags. I mean, it's got track numbers. It's got year.
An album artist. It's got the extended stuff. I don't know exactly what version this is, but it's got good meta tags.
Yeah, it looks like it's pretty good.
LAME is a good encoder. There's no doubt about that.
I'm impressed. And I tell you, at that bit rate, how do they get these albums to be without DRM? I don't understand.
I want to know how they negotiated this deal with the company.
They haven't gotten into the deal yet. I mean, the reason that they don't have all of the record companies is because they aren't doing any DRM. But I think that what they are getting are record companies that need Apple to be pushed.
This is an anti-Apple move by the record companies is what it is.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. You know, and they're giving away, you know, they're saying, well, we could have given this to you, but we're not going to. We're going to give it to Amazon because they want to build Amazon up. I think
Universal? I mean, who's on here?
It's Universal and there's somebody else. I mean, I'm not sure who A&M is part of.
There's a lot of indies too, I believe.
Oh, yeah. Right. I think this is fantastic.
It's pretty impressive. The last track I bought this morning was a kind of obscure thing that I saw on YouTube. Whereas I just did a count, iTunes has 42 different covers of this song. Amazon has 14, including basically the same 8 or 9 that are the most popular on iTunes. So, Klaus Nomi. I was looking for Klaus Nomi on iTunes. I couldn't get it there.
Total Eclipse. That's my Klaus Nomi impersonation. One thing I do note, if you do a search, it is at least included in the category suggestion. So I just did a search on Death Cab. And I get the records, I get apparel, and then I do MP3 downloads. I think you're right, Leo. I think it's something where that's probably an integration thing where they just haven't.
It's just a matter of time.
Otherwise, they would be leaving money on the table not to do that.
That's, is that Death Cab for ugly?
Death Cute. Yeah, Death Cab for cutie. You're Scott.
But here's the most important point. That
let me warm your milk up for you.
You made it right away, Merlin. I think it's a really good point is you Google Death Cab for cutie. How high up is Amazon going to show? It looks like it's showing up at number 7. In the Death Cab for Cutie search. And then if it goes to download this song, I mean, now it won't right away because, of course, this is new and Google hasn't had a chance to index it. But how long before you get that. I think that's going to be a killer application. Google is a much more of a in some ways a better interface than iTunes, right? At yep. least you search for it and you find it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the problem is I think that the challenge is now I have to say that I'm going to probably start buying some stuff from the Amazon store. I looked up the Police Regatta de Blanc, yeah. which is $9.99 on the iTunes store and $7.97 for 256-bit, non-DRM on the Amazon store. So I'm saving $2 and I'm getting better content. So for stuff that I know that I'm looking for, I think that that's going to make sense in a lot of cases. I think that the issue though is that I just get frustrated with web interfaces. Like,
well, wait a minute though. What if I have an Amazon affiliate account, right? So I make some money. What if I put on my blog, oh, here's my five right. favorite albums. Here's my download favorite. Them right now.
Yep.
That's a pretty good interface. I mean, that adds serendipity. That adds, I mean, I think that, Amazon has really knows how to do retail. I would be a little nervous if I'm not saying it's an iTunes killer. iTunes isn't going away. In fact, this works with iTunes, which I think is very interesting.
But what I think is interesting is I wonder how much the record companies are getting out of this. I bet you it's not as much as they're getting from Apple.
I bet they see it as an investment just to kind of cause some competition.
Yeah, because Amazon rarely gives more than half.
Do you think this is one of those moves where they give it away cheap and then they try to put Apple out of business and then jack the price up?
Walmart them, yeah.
I don't think they can.
I want to make note of everybody who's excited and thrilled about this now in case it were to become the dominant force so that I can listen to you all then berate it later.
Well, nobody wants anybody to become dominant. And that's what's exciting about this. It challenges what is essentially now very close to a monopoly.
You've been a starry-eyed fanboy for like 8 months about the iPhone. Now something legitimately awesome comes out and delivers, and you're like, I just want to see what you guys think about this. Well, you were like this for months.
What do I got to do?
Months before the iPhone came out. We're actually looking at
Uber, and I said I liked it.
You know what's retroactive, go back and not have had so many conversations about the iPhone.
I think what's really interesting is that there's no copy protection on it. And I think, we've been saying for the last month or so, ever since Steve's letter, this is the end of copy protection. DRM is going to start to fall. You know what's interesting is that all of a sudden Amazon is putting their money where Steve's mouth is.
Well, Steve wants to do that. The issue is the record companies aren't letting Apple do it. They're giving it to Amazon instead. So what they're doing is they're not letting Apple have the non-DRM. They're only letting Amazon do it because they're specifically trying to build this one up. So it's not that Steve wants to keep DRM. He wants it to be like what you see in Amazon. It's just that the record companies are specifically trying to build up a competitor because they haven't spent enough energy doing this up until now and everybody gets bloodied. I don't know whether I could see myself buying a bunch of stuff. I still don't think that a web interface is competitive with iTunes. I think there's a lot of problems with iTunes, but I don't think that they could take a big chunk of the market and it could be a very successful thing. I just don't think it's going to make a big chunk because I think that embedded interface where you're totally immersed in that, where you're keeping your music, where you're downloading stuff, I think it's a much more efficient interface.
Yeah, but they have another big advantage in that as yet, iTunes will not pay me for recommending songs to other people, whereas Amazon.com will. Yeah,
you can do that. There's an affiliate program.
iTunes has an affiliate program?
Oh, yeah. It's this totally janky third party. I think it's called Link Synergy or something. But I've used it a little. I use it for, you can refer people for to .Mac. You can refer people
I make a lot of money with Amazon affiliate referrals. I mean, that's lucrative.
Amazon makes it much, much simpler, though.
There's nothing
Google ads on your site.
There's nothing in the build a link section yet.
I will say if Amazon did do something that number one is like right now, I can't even, this is version one, so it's fine, but I can't even like resort by album or, by song title or by price or by, that stuff is, I think I can by price, but a lot of these are, you can't, the sorting isn't nearly as, straightforward. As I said, I always find web pages to be kind of clunky.
I think you're probably right. I think this is going to be a destination. It's where people go when they know what they want to buy.
Right.
And it's very quick and easy to, if you know what you want, you just put it in there and you buy it.
We're fanboys of Apple and Macs, and we love iTunes. And Alex and I, in particular, will just always, beat the hell out of anybody about how great iTunes is. I love iTunes. It's fantastic. But how about the rest of the freaking world and just the kind of market bludgeoning that Amazon has at their disposal. I don't think you can write that off. And the fact that, you know, yeah, whatever, it's not perfect yet in terms of sorting and stuff like that, but people understand Amazon.
Well, see, the thing is, I think if Amazon took some money and they built an actual, they took that downloader app or whatever and built an actual iTunes-like net app, it would go head to head with Apple and it would be a real problem.
A lot of people don't like iTunes. I mean, let's remember the color of our crystal here. There are a lot of people who don't love iTunes, and especially people on Windows and especially people on Linux. What are they doing for iTunes nowadays? Right.
You can leave the web interface here. I just think that if you had a net app that also fed into the same database and downloaded the same thing.
So for you, it's a syncing. Is it a syncing issue for you?
Yeah, no, I just don't. I don't like going up to the web. You know, I mean,
you just hate the web in general.
It's just this clunky, you know, it's always this clunky interface with all these.
Yeah, see, I would
things.
Disagree with you. The web is just what Amazon will do is they'll build RSS. They'll build all the standard APIs to this. You will see the Amazon store and music in the Amazon store everywhere. And I don't think that, I think you're thinking in terms of that Amazon webpage. I think that's maybe the last place you'll end up. I think that the web is much more flexible than iTunes. I wouldn't write off the web by any means.
The web's a lingua franca. I mean, look at how many people use Facebook every day. Yeah. They don't need a Facebook application. People understand web pages. What's that?
Yeah, he doesn't like Facebook.
Yeah, I can't even go to that site.
I think the real test is...
Therefore, people don't use Facebook.
The real test will be, I'm going to see how long it takes my kids to figure this out, right?
Yeah.
And watch what young... You got to watch what young people do. You know, right now, they go to LimeWire. LimeWire ain't that easy to use, but they managed to figure it out.
That's a killer feature, Leo. You can't deny that.
Free.
I think the main value of this will be to perhaps cause the iTunes folks to look at this and say, okay, there's some things we can adopt here that will help us. And I'd like to see the iTunes thing work out, because I'm kind of with Alex. I like having an application on my desktop that handles this. Also, you know, I don't know if they're going to do podcast and, you know, all the other things that you can get in the one-stop sort of iTunes approach. I do think, I looked at the Sony one, I looked at the Virgin one, I looked at all of these that have come out. I do think this is the best one to come out so far. I do think there are holes in it.
I mean, this is definitely the first one that I looked at and said, I'm actually going to buy stuff from. I mean, that's a big push.
I'll be honest, though, if I had to choose between one big, huge transforming feature for iTunes Store to get, it wouldn't be DRM-free everywhere. It would be a subscription model, because I disagree with you, Scott. The Urge service, I really, really enjoyed when it first came out. Before, as always, it got abandoned and left by the side of the road. Not until you suddenly realize that, wow, there are 8 billion gajillion songs and albums on this service, and I can have any one of them that I want for as long as I want it, so long as I keep coming up with a pretty trivial amount of money every single month. I was listening to a lot more music, and I was really broadening my horizons a lot during the 2 or 3 months that I was testing it out.
I have to say, I agree with you. I tried it on the Zune, and it's pretty cool. You load up, and if it's your first MP3 player, you just plug it in and load it up. You know, I've given iPods to a lot of people who have never used iTunes or had an iPod before, and that's a big barrier. Filling that thing up, if you don't have a lot of digitized music already, what are you going to buy all these albums one by one?
Yeah, I think the new 160 gig iPod, it doesn't have that sticker that says, please don't steal music. It has a sticker that says, oh, well, who the hell are we kidding? 160 gigs, go for it.
You know, we were talking about the share that Amazon might be sharing with the music companies. I don't understand this at all, but Jean-Bernard Lévy, who is the CEO of Vivendi, who is, of course, the big music company, one of the big three music companies and the owner of Universal Music Group, was berating Apple's split. They said the split between Apple and producers is indecent. Our contracts give too good a share to Apple.
He said, waving his big loaf of bread, adjusting his beret and his striped shirt.
Fought in your general direction. He said that Universal gets, and this is the first time we've heard anybody admit this, 70 cents out of each 99-cent song. And he said, that's not enough.
Okay, and let's put this in perspective. Minimum charge, if you buy a bunch of them, it's not quite this bad. But minimum charge on a single song from Visa is 25 cents. So there's 95 cents. Download is, you know, a couple pennies. So Apple, you know,
losing money.
They're probably not losing money, but they're probably making maybe a penny each. Now, of course, what he's saying is he wants to see.
I want it all. I want every bit of it.
If we don't get a dollar per iPod, is what he's saying. You know, it's
indecent.
That's
what they want. You're right. That's what they want.
Doesn't that guy look a little bit like Pepe Le Pew?
So sounds like him. I want more money.
To our French friends across the sea, we say aloha. Thank you for listening. Buy our sponsors merchandise. We like you.
Oh, boy. They know. Hey, my name is...
They know that Americans have a certain stereotype, and boy, are we...
They talk like this when they talk about Americans. It's okay.
Hey, Leo, are you going to shoot some guns later?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Some guns, that's some pork rind.
Yeah.
Hey, can't we get us some pigeons, put them in a cage, and go shoot them and call it hunting?
Hey, I have an idea. Hey. Let's get drunk and fail to appreciate jazz music.
I understand there's some nature that still hasn't been despoiled. I got the pickup truck. Let's go.
And you've just been listening to our impression of French people. Believe it or not.
On the Night Owl, during NPR.
How many different we'll groups can you spend in one episode?
Don't you think that's pretty amazing that this guy is saying 70 cents is not enough?
Well, that's the problem with all this. Everybody wants it all. Everybody wants their side to have it all. Everybody says we should have it all.
I'm starting to feel sorry for Apple.
Yeah, we were attacking Apple. Now we love them.
Now we love them. I didn't say I love them. I said I felt sorry for them. Okay. Say again, Andy.
I was saying, Steve, we're fickle that way. We apologize. Keep trying to live in loyalty. We like it when you try to do that.
We're doing what we can. Microsoft has announced pricing for Mac Office 2008. I think Ars Technica, Jackie Chan, got it right when she said they're taking a lesson out of Apple's iPhone PR book, make a news story every day so that people keep thinking about you. They now have said that it will be $399.95, same price as a current Office suite, and there will be the traditional student discount, which I think the student and
$394.
No. I think it's $150 for students. Does anybody care?
Not me.
I have to say, I'm liking pages and numbers an awful lot.
Too.
Yeah, I'm done.
I think the only people who buy Microsoft Office are people who have to because they have work with Windows users, right?
But you can do that.
Oh boy! All at once, and that really gets crazy in here. Go ahead, Alex.
You can save out now. The one place that you that is really really valuable within Word that was added to Pages that, but you couldn't integrate back and forth between Word and Pages. I don't think is the versioning. You know, so that you know when you're working with a bunch of people on a document and everyone's adding, you know, deleting right. this and moving right. this stuff over, that is very, very valuable. And it wasn't available in Pages. And now that it is, Pages will save out to a Word document. So you can save it out to, as a Word document, send it to your friend that's on a PC, and it's fine. But I don't think it keeps all that versioning.
I have to say, though, the Pages versioning is so much nicer than the Word versioning. I mean, that's the way to do it.
Yeah.
Well, there isn't even any need to go as complicated as Pages. I think that for 75% of all the people who do word processing, Google Documents will have every feature that they're likely to use in Pages. That Pages has the 20% of features that some other people are going to be using, and Microsoft Word will have the 5% that are required if you're going to be writing something long form or something incredibly collaborative.
Yeah,
my problem is I write on a plane, and I can't get to any of the Google services. That's always my, I'm not connected most of the time that I'm
actually
writing.
That's where my prediction comes in. My prediction that I'm going to make every week, that they're going to tighten their relationship with Apple, and you're going to have a way to sync this stuff on .Mac, and you're going to be able to take stuff with you. That's my prediction.
Yeah. I'm surprised they still haven't gotten really good integration between Documents and iPhone, because that's a kind of a killer feature.
Oh, completely. You can do it. It's really janky. I just wrote about this on 43 Folders the other day. You can go in and log in. I sometimes think this is an illusion, but you go in and you can actually go into your Google Documents and edit them. It sucks because it's no fun to edit on an iPhone.
You have to do HTML, don't you?
No, not at all. And I've had no problem getting in.
You can get in. I've been finding that you can get in and you can see your documents, you can open them, but you can't. Once any instance in which you really need to have a keyboard, the keyboard doesn't pop up unless you're clicking the button for HTML editing. And at that point, you know, the keyboard awakes from a slumber and crawls from the crypt. But otherwise, you can look, but you can't touch.
I'll revisit that. I will look again. I'll make sure that was not cold.
I am stinky. I am sleep deprived. I am unshaven because my iPhone book has its drop deadline in 3.5 days. So I'm going through every single chapter and making sure the things that were true 5 weeks ago or even 1 week ago are still true.
I will tech edit that. I keep
going back to Google Documents because I'm saying, my God, Google Reader was ready the day before the iPhone came out. Why aren't they putting documents on the iPhone?
I met the Google Reader programmer waiting in line for my iPhone, and he said he stayed up late the night before, making sure that it worked nicely on the iPhone.
Wow. And of course, there are lots of good tricks, and I hope you buy my book to find those out later, readers, for accessing, you know, Word documents and stuff remotely. But still, it's like, oh, God, I know that the week after this thing gets locked down, there's going to be idocs.google.com, and it's going to be the most awesome thing ever.
Yeah,
I'm just looking right now at the, apropos of nothing, at the Gmail blog, and it looks like they just released an update to Google Calendar that's iPhone friendly. And I really want to try it, but I don't want to turn my phone on and make that noise.
Go ahead.
Really? You get a friendly looking, apparently you get a pretty friendly. If you go to it's a gmailblog.blogspot.com, the latest entry will show you. It looks pretty sexy.
What is the address that I go to on the iPhone?
Calendar.google.com.
Oh, just the regular Google Calendar.
Yeah, and log in.
Oh, that's cool. I've been using Spanning Sync, your recommendation, and man,
how's it working?
That works great. Cool.
Isn't it funny to use it? Isn't it funny to how I was talking about this on the site today? It's funny how I end up using it in reverse. I think it's designed to be used as something where I type stuff into iCal and then that goes to my Google Calendar. And I totally use it the opposite way. I do everything in GCal now, and I just want it to be able to sync to .Mac. So I just use it to sync back to the iCal.
Right. No, I think you should be able to enter it wherever you are.
I thought you were a Plaxo man. Doesn't Plaxo have that?
I use Plaxo as well.
They've got built-in syncing, right?
They do, too, but the Google Calendar syncing, I don't know, a little flaky, but I have been using that, yeah. Actually, now, oh my God, I wonder if I've crossed the beams.
Oh, no. You're going to have like 15 in the same phone call.
I might be in trouble. By the way, this news just in, phonenews.com is saying that there's some reason to think that Apple may have violated federal warranty laws, the Magnuson-Moss Act, by saying that hacking the iPhone violates its warranty.
You know, that's
where's
just
your,
not
where's
as
your lawyer
as breaking
now,
into a hotel room with men at gunpoint and stealing back your autographed footballs. I'm sorry. That's not going to make it on Inside Edition.
It's a little complicated. Apparently, the Magnuson-Moss Warranty Act states that Apple cannot void a warranty for a product with third-party enhancements or modifications unless it damages the product.
So they already said that they're claiming the damage exemption. They've already said that.
Oh, they are.
Yeah.
Okay. Public. By the way, the Google Calendar looks beautiful on the iPhone. Oh,
I'm telling you,
my
word, it's on the way. I'm
telling
you.
Oh my gosh, it works. It's got a quick add. Okay, I'm gonna leave you guys for a minute. Hold on. Okay, I'm better now. Wow.
Once there's some kind of a way to deal with your contacts. I know there's contacts built into Gmail, but if they can pull that stuff together, man.
That's what's really missing, isn't it?
Yeah, that and a to-do list app. If there was some kind of basic task management that maybe synced with iCal, for example.
Yeah. Have you looked at it yet, Merlin?
No, I haven't.
Oh, it's gorgeous.
I don't want to make the noise.
Oh.
Now, what would be the motivation for using this instead of the built-in calendar app?
Because it's Google Calendar, so I guess there's some advantage to that.
It's Googlier, yes.
Well, if you're on a Windows machine.
Yeah.
Right.
It's just universal. It's also shared calendars if you want to use shared calendars and that kind of thing. It looks like Google's done a good job of making it fit the iPhone meme. I think we better get to our picks here before the end of the day. And before we get to that, though, I do want to mention Audible.com sponsoring this podcast yet again, those fools, but they just come back for more. Audible.com/MacBreak. You can get yourself a free book, but there's actually something special going on right now, and I really want you all to know about it. In fact, it launched yesterday, because we're recording this on the 25th, so it launched today on the 25th, but you'll hear this tomorrow, so it's really yesterday. Anyway, it's a really interesting idea. And there's a special offer for Twit and MacBreak Weekly listeners only. So I'm going to fill you in on that. Audible has commissioned its first book just for Audible.com. It's called The Chopin Manuscript. But what they're doing is kind of interesting. They're getting 15 different famous thriller offers to write 15 different chapters. Actually, Jeffrey Deaver starts it and wraps it up. But then they've got 14 other masters making one serial thriller called The Chopin Manuscript. They're going to release a chapter a week. Now, normally you can get it streaming as an Audible subscriber, but Twit listeners can get the first chapter for download absolutely free. You go to audible.com/freechapter. This is the only place you'll hear that special URL that no one could possibly guess. audible.com/freechapter. And you can get the first chapter of the Chopin manuscript, whether you're a subscriber or not, absolutely free. Of course, our standing offer still stands, that free book, just by going to audible.com/MacBreak. You sign up, get a credit toward any book in the Audible store. They tell me, I've been saying 35,000 books. They say it's now 45,000 books, 135 plus devices, including, of course, all the iPods. Really a great way to get your reading done. Listen to Audible books. By the ratings are on this Chopin manuscript are really stellar. People are really loving it. Alfred Molina reads it. Get your first chapter absolutely free at audible.com/freechapter. And if you want to join Audible, don't forget audible.com/MacBreak. We do thank Audible for their support this week. Now it's time for our picks of the week. Let's start with Andy Iannotko because he's got a couple of them.
I got a couple of them. I try to make things timely. I want this podcast to be as timely as today's headlines, which actually that would make them 36 hours old. As timely as today's dig.com.
I could put it out now.
So by the time you... Oh, damn it. Guy, why are you listening to us? I'm sorry. God, we're wasting time.
No. No, we're not.
Leo, they're an hour into the podcast. Oh, they know late. By now we've been wasting their time. Yeah. I know I've been wasting you guys' time.
If they don't know that about us already, it's too late.
Exactly. There's no warranty expressed or implied.
That's right.
This podcast may brick your sense of technology and your appreciation of Web 2.0.
And if it doesn't, we'll figure out a way to make it do so quick.
I got two things. One is pimpmysafari.com, which I know that some people are going to be very familiar with that. But it's one of those sites where I can't believe it's been around for so long, and I've just found it just a couple of weeks ago. You're used to the customizable web browser in the world being Firefox, the one you can add plugins to, the ones you can basically change and add all kinds of features to. Not everybody knows that Safari is just as customizable. And pimpmysafari.com is the one resource you need that will show you everything that you can do with Safari that it wasn't capable of when it left the factory. Any tasks that you're really interested in, be it automator actions, things that require Apple scripts, special bookmarks, all kinds of different things. I've basically almost had to create a second copy of Safari on a second machine just because I want to install all these really cool things before I decide that, okay, I really don't want the big fat orange button that distracts me from the thing I want to do. That was fun, but I'm going to remove it now. But again, you'll lose a good couple hours playing through this because there's so many interesting and cool things you can do with it.
It's kind of neat. Until you see that site, you don't realize how programmable Safari is. I mean, Mail is, and I guess they made the Safari very easy to modify.
They also call out the classic at the very top. I'm on the About page here. Site designed by my good internet friend, Mr. John Hicks. The essentials. I totally agree. I don't know if you agree, Andy, but Saft, Pith Helmet, and Safari Stand.
Yeah,
that'll change your world. Those three right there can change your world today.
I gave a demo not knowing that I still had these things plugged in. And question number one was, why is your browser doing that? Do you like the fact that it does it, or do you not like the fact that it doesn't like it? Oh, well, because I'm a clever person who knows how to customize Safari.
Yes. Is this an open API? I mean, is Apple making this possible, or is it people have figured out how to hack around with it?
It's mostly input managers, I think. And a lot of them are going to go away.
Leopard breaks input managers. Yeah. Pith Helmet says he doesn't know if it's going to work. That's one of the things I really think that made Firefox so potent was these extensions, and Apple would be wise to keep those going somehow. Okay, that was one. Pimp My Safari, excellent.
I've got another one, but the one that's as good, as fresh as yesterday's headlines. I just got an email from Scott Kurtz, our good internet friend. He's the artist creator, Rain Puba, of the PvP Online comic strip.
And has included us in various episodes, I might add.
Exactly. Thank you for the live journal avatar, Scott. I should probably have asked you for your permission first, but no. Sorry. Information wants to be
public
free,
domain.
Scott.
You should have
thought about that first. But he's having a book sale. I believe it or not, I like web comics, but I also like physical books you can put on your shelf and carry in a car with you and give to people, because it's, you know, a URL makes a pretty crappy Christmas present, but an actual book, and especially giving them the ability to essentially download 6 months worth of comics at once, that's a good gift. And he's having a sale on his books with a very, very interesting special. If you buy all four volumes, which are discounted to close to about close to 20% off, the book pack is normally about $50. It's down to $40. But if you buy the book pack, he will not only autograph them, he will also draw a sketch in the book of your choice. And now I'm speaking. Wow, I haven't talked to Scott about this, but I'm pretty comfortable knowing his work ethic that you'll basically get 300 Klingons fighting 1,000,000 Persian soldiers, just like the scenes from 300, on every single page. He will draw that for you. And if you send him pictures of your friends, he'll make sure the Klingons or the Persians look like your friends. So we're talking about, what, that's 1,000,000 plus 300 figures, all for $40. If it was just the artwork, that would be worth the money. But you also get four books worth of wonderful, wonderful comics. That's not like it's not Mac-related. What I love about PvP Online is that the staff, the cast of characters, they're sort of like the Iron Chefs of nerdliness. And the Iron Chef of Macintosh is a character by the name of Brent Sienna. In book number two, he tries to convince one of his Mac-hating friends to buy an iPod so he can do a Switcher ad starring him. And so it's one of my favorite series, and that's one of the things you'll get, along with that poster size. Did I mention it was poster size? It was poster size, mural size. You can paste it right onto the side of your dorm room or your custom van. This will look great on the side of a custom van, all for $40.
Ooh.
That's a lot of entertainment, folks.
Ooh, very cool. And there's our picks for Mr. Notco at CWOB.com, soon to be at his new site any day now. When do you have an estimated time of arrival?
I shall be released from my bondage on the end of this week, my drop deadline on the book. Up until then, I'm nursing it along. I should have it done, I'm guessing, by Halloween.
All right.
I'm doing a stage rollout. I've decided to take the fine example set by the lazy butted developers of every web 2.0 app. If I just put a sticker saying beta on the top of the masthead, I can get away with all kinds
years.
Of bad design mistakes and non-functional features for about 2 years.
Years.
So expect the beta of this to be up within the next few weeks.
Alex Lindsay, your pick, my friend.
So mine's a little bit more techie than I usually go, and this is a Zero Alex. This is a Kismet.
Did we mention the URL of PvP Online?
No.
PvP Online, PvPOnline.com.
It's short for player versus player.
Player versus player online, all one word. Jeez, that would have been dumb.
Well, we put it in the show notes next week.
Okay.
Alex, how many Alexes is? Alex is one zero Alexes is.
It's zero Alexes.
Oh.
So this is called Kismac, and this is a little bit.
Oh yeah. So that's a hacker tool, dude.
It is a hacker tool, but I'm not actually using.
You learned
it
about
hacking.
This. Yeah, I know who you learned about this from. I'm not going to say anything, but I know who you learned about this from.
Yeah, well, we have some people in the office that may or may not know a lot about Kismac, But to be honest, I didn't know that much about it. You know, it was something that the guys, you know, played with a lot in here in the office, and I didn't know much about it until I had a problem with, I had it on my computer because we were talking about it. So I put it on there, and it was great that I had it. What happened was is that my speakeasy went under for whatever reason.
His speakeasy, by the way, is not his free bar, prohibition era bar, but his internet access.
I have one of those, too.
Yes.
But the speakeasy that my internet provider. So my internet provider wasn't going. And it turned out that it was a user error, and but I couldn't get connected to the internet, and so I couldn't figure out what the phone number was to call speakeasy. I couldn't figure out how to there was no way to get through. And so I opened up Kismac, and what Kismac will do is it'll cut through a lot of stuff. I mean, a lot of us are sitting around a lot of Wi-Fi signals that are hidden or you can't see them or, you know, everything else. And it'll give you a lot of information
Protected by various things like web.
Don't you hate
silly things
that.
Like FWPA.
Trivially protected.
No, if you're going to protect
Didn't want people on the network, they wouldn't have put such a cheap lock
exactly.
on there.
Exactly.
I used that excuse all through high school, and it worked. Of course, we tried to stealth back then, so take
So now I will say that So what I did is I ran I ran Kismac, and in my, I'm in San Francisco, and at my apartment, I can see from my Mac, I can see 8 signals. When I open up Kismac, I can see 18, and then it shows the variable, the average, the signal strength, and how they're encrypted and everything else. And there was about four of them that were just completely opened. You know, that but it could tell me which one was the best one. So I'm not, because the problem is when you're looking at it through airport, it doesn't give you all this information. So I just picked an open one. I got a signal. I went to Speakeasy. I got it fixed. And then it was over, you know, but the thing is that it, you know, it would have taken me forever. I would have ended up going to a Starbucks or, you know, I guess going very slowly through my iPhone, trying to, you know, find, you know, figure out all the stuff. And it was just great to be able to just kind of quickly fix this stuff. Now I will say, you know, the other thing that Kismac will do that I haven't done, I don't know how to do it yet, but or yet or anything else, but I know people who do. The other thing that Kismac does is it makes you very paranoid about everything you do on using Wi-Fi, because you get very clear, you know, that you can cut through WPA and or at least WEP very, very quickly, you know. And so if I needed to, I could have done that. I didn't need to. But you can hack those signals pretty
easily. Alex Lindsay, you are a very bad man.
I know. But I didn't actually do anything. I didn't hack anything. But it was, and I only used it for, you know, a very, very quick period of time to fix mine. And mine's left open. And I feel like it's even.
Now, you know, it's even. Oh, we're even. Well, it is a good lesson. In fact, there's a video that's been going around the net for some time, how to use Kismac to crack WEP. So it is often used for that. But you didn't do that.
No, I didn't. I didn't have to do any of that stuff. It was interesting though, is if you actually go to the kismac.de website, they'll actually say Germany does not let them host it anymore in Germany. So they had to move it. So they give you a link to where you can go to the Netherlands and download it because it's a threat to national security in Germany. So,
really?
So, but it's
wow.
a fun little yeah. site. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Kismac is the biggest threat to national security. Germany.
So anyway, that's it.
Very good. Kismac free. Say again.
They're also terrified of rock and roll music.
There's that. but they love David Hasselhoff.
There you go.
There you go. No dancing happening there.
So, let us move on to Mr. Scott Bourne, your pick of the week.
My pick is not a software pick. It's not a hardware pick.
Not a hardware pick. Whatever could it be?
It's a clothing pick. It's the first ever MacBreak Weekly clothing pick.
I want to dress like Scott Bourne. When somebody comes along and says, I want to dress like Scott Bourne, what do you recommend, Scott Bourne?
I recommend my very own shoe line from Puma.
You're kidding.
You can go to Puma Shoes, and you will see that they do, in fact, carry the Scott Bourne shoe. Has my signature on the bottom?
No.
I challenge you to look at it right now and go online. You'll see the Scott Bourne shoe.
What's the domain?
That's a big challenge without the URL. You're right.
I found
that's
domain.
The other Funny. Scott Bourne. Wait a minute.
Yeah. It just so happens that the world champion skateboarder is also named Scott Bourne. And for some reason, they chose his shoe over the one I had submitted, which had a picture of the iPhone on the bottom. But, you know, it's still a cool product. I mean, how many people can buy a shoe that has their name on it?
Let's play the Puma Scott Bourne advertisement right now, because, Scott, you've lost some weight, and I think you're looking pretty fine in that Puma jacket. Those tattoos are new?
Yeah, brand new.
Very nice.
Fresh ink. That's my motto. And anyway, so that's my pick of the week. And I'd like to mention, if I could, Leo, we got a brand new show we're involved with called Girls Gone Geek.
Wow.
And here's the liner. Some girls go wild. These girls go wired.
Okay. I can't wait. Where would I see Girls Gone Geek?
At girlsgonegeek.tv, appearing on your browser next week.
Next week. Oh, shoot. And who is involved in Girls Gone Geek?
I'm the executive producer, and we've got a fresh group of five young ladies who are very interested in technology, representing all facets of the technological world, doing a weekly show. And it's not about, you know, what clothes make your butt look good. It's about how to make that new Windows mobile device work.
Cool. Can't wait to see it. It's funny. I started to type Girls Gone Geek into my browser.
And something else happened.
Well... Yeah, girlswithshoehorns.com. So I don't know if I should go to that site.
That any search engine, people don't put that in your search engine.
Girls with shoehorns.
Wait a minute.
I haven't seen it,
so
but I know.
Such a bet.
I don't Thank even you, know why that was in my browser.
Oh, I don't know. I don't know, officer.
How'd that get there?
I mean, sweetie,
it says
sweetie,
here that girls with shoehorns that has been. It's been shut down by the authorities, Leo. We didn't even make it in time.
Oh, forcibly.
We regret to inform our loyal fans that girlswithshoehorns.com has been shut down by the authorities.
Well, I don't. Now I really wonder how it got in there. And I'm kind of sad I didn't go there before I knew. All right. Scott Bourne is the Scott Bourne Puma shoe with his own signature on the bottom. And don't forget girlsgonegeek.com next week.
No, .tv.
I'm sorry, .tv next week.
Thank you, sir.
Good. Can't wait to see that. You know, since we're all picking websites, I'm going to pick one that I actually just found and I hadn't seen before, but I'm sure going to use it, called secondrotation.com. Anybody familiar with that? It's the easy way to cash in on your gadgets. You actually, I love this. They have a little estimator. You go online and let me just type in bricked iPhone. Just see. So you go through the estimate. Is it a 4 or 8 gigabyte bricked iPhone? It is an 8 gigabyte. Does it power on? Yeah. AC adapter? No.
Maybe.
Maybe. Rechargeable battery? Oh, yeah. Original software CD? Didn't come with one. Original manuals? Yeah. Original cables? Sure. Overall condition? Well, how many stars do you give a bricked iPhone?
Depends what you mean by condition. It's still physically intact, and
let's
it has a very
say
nice
good. Calculate. The estimated trading value, $232, and you can have them pay via check or PayPal. If you accept the offer, you mail it into them. They check it to make sure it actually matches, so they're going to probably turn it on, unfortunately.
And they'll send you a photo of a dollar bill.
Just like I sent them a photo of a phone. But this is a great way to, you know, you're not going to get full dollar if you sold it yourself on eBay. You'd probably get more money. But what a great way to get rid of all those old iPhones. You just don't know what to do.
And do they sell it on eBay? Is that their deal?
I suspect. I don't know where they sell it, but I think it's a good idea.
Like all those commercials on late night TV, like, honey, there's too much gold piling up in the house. If only there was a service that we could get rid of it.
Sellyourgold.com.
We'll send you a free gold kit.
What am I going to do? What do I do with all these Kruger ads?
What to do? All right, you don't like that? I got another one. Well, I'll save this for next time, but I did get, I'll give you a hint. A preview. I did finally get the SD5, the Panasonic high def camcorder, and boy, I can see why Andy and Alex love them. You have the SD1, and it's just great. I mean, I'm really impressed with the quality of this. One little thing to be aware of, though: these files are big. You need to have a very recent computer to even attempt to play them back or edit them. And you need software that supports it, which fortunately on the Mac side, we're pretty good because we've got iMovie and Final Cut.
The one thing I'll say is if you're making videos that you're planning to watch on your computer and not on your TV, you know, so if you're going to put stuff up, you know, really working at 960 by 540 is plenty.
That'll help.
It'll help a lot, yeah.
In fact, there's a bug in iMovie that stretches out the 1080 for some reason.
There's a what?
There's a bug in iMovie that stretches the 1080. They say they're going to fix that soon. Have you noticed that?
I haven't, but I've been capturing most of the stuff I've captured. I view the camera as kind of my.
Oh yeah, you capture right to the iMovie, the Mac.
So I'm capturing straight into iMovie at 960 by 540 most of the time. That's if funny. I want something bigger, I have a bigger camera.
Yeah, I might start shooting at that.
So I just do the 960 by 540. That means it's going to be one quarter the bandwidth. You know, so a much smaller image. And it the other advantage that it has is that iMovie seems to fairly intelligently. Pull the when you make it 960 by 540, what it's actually doing is grabbing one of the fields because it's interlaced and then scaling it horizontally, which means that you're getting kind of a progressive scan, you know, a nice, you know, none of those little lines when everybody's moving quickly.
Right.
So all of that goes away when you go to the 960 by 540 in iTunes. And so you get a really nice clean image at 960 by 540.
I have to say, this is a great camera. I am impressed.
What I like about the most is that I think it's the ultimate capture device in general. Where if you need to have something in your bag so that if you want to record some audio, if you want to record some great video, if you want to take still pictures, you have something in your bag that can do that.
Yeah.
If I were taking a long trip, I would definitely have this in my bag.
Yeah. And we'll talk more about it next week. But I just have to say I've only had it for about a week now, but I've been very impressed with it. Really.
We've had ours for 3 weeks and we can't believe how good it is.
Oh, you have one too. Everybody's got one.
Well, you know, they were pimping this stuff all over the product announcement.
Right,
I couldn't resist.
Right. I held out for the 5. I don't know if it's better or not. The low light's grainy, but not awful. Certainly usable. And I have to, boy, is it a nice form factor. Merlin Mann, time for your pick, my friend.
Okay, you guys can choose. As you know, I'm still very high on cold medicine. I have I was referred to by a physician as a 100-year sinus infection. It's the kind of sinus infection that only comes along every 100 years.
Wow.
You can choose. I have two. You can choose either a website that's kind of interesting or a piece of hardware that's kind of interesting. Neither of which has anything to do with Macs.
Hardware. Hardware. We all agree on hardware.
I bought a lens for my SLR camera that has changed my life.
Ooh. The lens that changed his life, ladies and gentlemen.
I got a Canon. I'm going to read the whole thing here off Amazon. I got a Canon EF 50mm f1.4 USM medium telephoto.
Isn't that awesome?
I've got a 50mm lens, and it's completely changed.
Not a zoom. It's a fixed focus lens.
It is.
It's the 1,000 pounds, right?
It's the medium quality one. There's one that you can get for like L.
It's not the L.
But
1.4, you're right, Alex. Boy, that makes a difference.
Here's the deal. Here was my complaint with getting an SLR or DSLR. My problem was Scott and I had a good conversation about this at his office. It drives me crazy that I'm trying to learn like five different things at one time, right? If I run it on M, you know, the manual setting, I've got to be learning all of these different things at one time. And so generally I've been a P man. I leave it in, you know, pretty much.
I'm a P man too. In fact, I'll be right back.
I read that online.
that's what you get at the Girls with Shoehorn site. The beauty of this guy is, here's the deal. My friend Chris Glass told me about this lens. You pop this thing on your camera, you put it in P, and you just get really good at framing stuff. It's a fantastic. So basically, the short version is that this particular lens, and I'm going to talk out of my butt until one of you guys corrects me because you all know more about cameras than me. But it's pretty close to the way like the human eye sees something in terms of depth of field. And if you just point this thing at stuff and shoot, it's really fast, and you can shoot in low light, and it just takes great photos of like faces where everything in the background's really fuzzed out. It's just a totally brain dead lens that teaches you how to just get better at framing shots. And I love it. My photos have gotten 20 times better.
I'm sure that Scott can add. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, not just that, but it's just a very, very fast lens. It will give you solutions that you will not have otherwise. One of my beloved nieces took up hockey last season. And man, there's no way in hell you can really shoot a sport that is really, really fast, that takes place in a dark, dark auditorium against a huge white sheet of whatever. Unless you have a really fast lens like a 1.4 or 1.8. And your choice is you can either spend $1,000 on a proper sports zoom, or you can spend $100 to $150, mine is a Nikon, but it's the same principle, on a very, very affordable f1.4 or f1.8 lens. It is an essential. It should be, after you buy an accessory flash for your SLR, that should be the second major purchase you make after that.
I don't own a flash, you know. In fact, I realized that after having my Canon for 2 years, that the flash in it doesn't actually work because I hate the flash look, you know, in general when I'm taking pictures, and mostly what I take pictures of are people. And the reason that I can do that all the time, I mean, even in the evening, is because, you know, or almost at night, is, I'll just turn the ISO up and the other thing you can do is, instead of putting in program, you can also put an aperture priority and set it to.
Is that TV or which one is
A,
that?
It's A.
AV. Okay.
So if you put an aperture priority, what it means is I'm going to give you the aperture and you make a shutter speed that makes that work, you know? So now I'm going to turn it all the way to 1.4. And what that's going to give me is razor thin depth of field, which means that literally if I focus on someone's eyes, the front of their nose may be out of focus. I mean, it's really, really thin, but you get these really lush. If anytime I go somewhere where there's a lot of people and I want to shoot a lot of pictures of people that look like a magazine shot, you know, look like a great, you know, that classic look, I'm just going to set it to 1.4. If I have to shoot a lot fast, I'll set it to 1.4. I'll set it to aperture priority. I usually set it to all manual, but it's a great way to start. And you'll get these really, you know, the whole background is completely out of focus, you know, and it looks really focused and it looks really classic.
I hate to use this term because it's wrong. It implies the wrong thing, but I wanted something where I could start taking snapshots. And by that, I mean, I want to focus completely on what's in the shot rather than thinking about, you know, kind of how I'm taking it. And I want to get to a point where then I can eventually get a little more Scott Bourne like in my control of the image. But at first, I want to get better at shooting. And this, what do people call this? Where, you know, you do the zoom with your feet. With this, you just you walk closer to or further from something, and it's just great for snapshots. It's so fast, and you always capture the moment. I'm curious what Scott thinks. So Scott, you've probably got the bajillion dollar version of this, right?
I have the 1.2, which is a little faster, but yeah, it's a nice lens, and the reason it's working for you, Merlin, is the wider the aperture, the more blurred out the background, and it helps you to focus on the foreground subject. And that blurriness in the background is real pretty on this lens. That's known as the bokeh of the lens.
How do you spell that?
It's a Japanese word, so I'm not sure. And the bokeh on this lens is very nice. For the money, it's a great lens. You're right, it does sort of approximate the standard view of the human eye. That's a little bit magnified by virtue of the camera using having a 1.3 sensor, but it's still close enough to be good. And
if the good point is you can go either way on these. This is apparently the middle of three. I've got the one that was four one-hundredths of an Alex, but you can also get one that's like $80. And there's of course the high end one. But this one's a little heavier. It feels more solid. It's not plastic. But the reviews I read, I was actually pretty close. The $80 version of this is, which is a 1.8, I believe,
It's a 1.8.
Fantastic.
They offer a 1.8, a 1.4, and a 1.2.
There was a 1.0. Well, anyway, we're geeking out, but there was a 1.0.
Well, this is all I'm saying is if you are out there and you look at photos on Flickr and you go, gosh, I wish my photos look more like that, and you've got an SLR, the very first thing to do is take off that stupid telephoto and buy a decent lens.
I bought $80 one.
Cheap
one,
yeah, exactly. And I'll tell you, I did buy a flash just because I want to start experimenting with. I got it one of those, whatever the speed light flashes. But you're right. I mean, this would be the first thing you should buy after you get an SLR is consider one of these lenses. And apparently, these used to be the lenses that shipped on most cameras in the days before. Is that correct? And,
oh, yeah.
And so that's why you could look at so many awesome old photos and they look great instead of like, you know, the first day, the first thing you want to do is start zooming in on everything with a telephoto, which is about the last thing you need to learn.
Telephotos used to be kind of, people used to hate telephotos. Everybody would get a fixed focus lens.
Yeah, fixed focal length lenses are always sharper than telephoto lenses.
Yeah. Still, even today,
anyway,
our modern
not a Mac thing.
In a zoom lens, not a telephoto.
Zoom lenses.
Yeah. Zoom, sorry. Yeah. But yeah, this is totally un Mac-like, but I know you guys are camera geeks, so I thought you'd dig that. And,
but you can use a Mac to process the photos.
There you go.
I absolutely do. And I use Acorn.
Oh, yeah. Love that Acorn. By the way, I think that isn't Pixelmator coming out now in its final release?
As of today, yeah, it's 1.0 today.
Yeah. Yeah,
that should be our pick. Well, we made it a pick in the past, but so now you can get Pixelmator and see for yourself how good it is.
It really should have been my pick. It's really cool.
Dang nabbit. That's the... Oh, well, we make it a universal pick. All four of us pick it.
Yay.
Hey.
It's good stuff.
We're out of time. In fact, this has been another lengthy edition, but that's because those picks just go on and on. But we love the picks, so we're going to keep doing them. Merlin Mann is available for download at 43folders.com. Always great stuff. Always great stuff on there. And I bet we've
recently launched with our new design.
I love it.
It looks gorgeous.
Thank you. Thank you. You'll love it or hate it, but I love it.
Nobody's
saying
bad things about it. I wouldn't expect.
Well, no. But I mean, it's, you know, anytime you change something, of course, people have opinions, but there's a lot of, I like it because there's a lot of new functionality under the hood. It's a lot easier to find cool stuff than
that's
on the old
beautiful.
Site. Designed by my friend, Chris Glass, the guy who told me about the lens stuff. Yeah. And I love it a lot.
And you now have a job board too, which is kind of cool.
Job board. I'm starting to get guest contributors, allowing some friends of mine to write stuff.
The Merlin Wiki.
Yeah. It's an empire. It's an empire. It's a house of cards. but it's an empire.
You know, all empires are house of cards. It just depends on your time frame. Merlin Mann, 43folders.com. Scott Bourne is the Apple Phone Show guy, and now Geeks with Girls.
Girls Gunky Dundee.
Actually, Geeks with Girls is not a bad idea.
Shoehorngirls.com.
I'm sorry. Girls with. Say it again.
Girls Gone Geek.
GirlsGoneGeek.com. .tv. .tv. Sorry.
Okay, buddy.
GirlsGoneGeek.tv. We'll put a link in the
show. Remember, ladies, once you've gone geek, you never go oblique.
Yeah.
Geometry Humor brought to you by Andy Yanotko from CWOB.com and the Chicago Sun-Times.
Sorry, was that a little bit too obtuse?
Oh, no, I think you're pretty acute.
Don't excuse me. I'm a little bit nutty.
Oh, gosh.
Yes.
And Alex Lindsay at pixelcore.com and pixelcore.tv for all their great podcasts and videocasts.
And we've got a big event coming up. I just wanted to let everybody know about. I'm actually doing a boot camp. So it's a visual effects boot camp. It's 2 weeks long.
Ooh.
2 weeks long.
Ooh. Wow. And
it is. It's mostly designed to get people off the ground from literally, you know, here's how to do the stuff you need to know in Photoshop, all the way through green screen and Roto and HDR and match moving and all these other things. If you don't know what I'm talking about, but you want to know, this is it. Not cheap. but
2 weeks of your time shouldn't be cheap.
Yeah, exactly. So it's me, you know, I'm doing it. We actually have some guys coming in to talk, some visual effects supervisors actually from big visual effects firms here in San Francisco. And so it's going to be a really great time. It's October 22nd. If you want to know more information, it's PixelCore, that's with an S, .eventbrite.com. That's the registration page and has a lot of information and everything else. But check it out, and I'll send you the link when we put it in the show notes.
Excellent. Excellent, excellent, excellent. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. We'll see you next Wednesday. Another Mac Break is broke.